Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July the 29th, 1999, and in the fireside room this evening we have what other lenses do I have than Nielsen's number 99-4. Let's listen in.
This is to the audio crew. You can roll the tape. This is session 4 of the Enneagram study with Roy Nielsen and Mary Obasacher Nielsen. And this title this evening is Wings and Arrows, What Other Lenses Do I Have Access To? When I had to get glasses, I didn't like it at all. None of us really like to get glasses. But glasses helped me to see again when I had lost really some significant sight, as they help all of us. Well, at one stage, I went from one lens to two lenses. And before I knew it, I thought I wasn't old enough yet, but it was bifocal time. And so I then had two lenses that I needed to see. The pair of glasses I have now are one of these blended lens thing, you know, you just keep going up and down. You can see all different kinds of things. You learn to adjust your eyes. What we're going to do tonight as we look at wings and arrows is to attempt to discover four other lenses that each personality type has so that we can use those other lenses also to understand ourselves better. With that little introduction, let us begin with a word of prayer. Gracious God, sometimes we're afraid to look inside. Give us courage to do that. For we know that when we look within, we will discover the giftedness with which you have gifted each one of us. And we will discover the shadow that is part of us too. Help us to embrace the whole. And to know that you are in our life from the very beginning, and that our closest contact with you is the fact that we bear your image. Help us this evening to use the other lenses possible to get a clearer picture and see ourselves more distinctly and clearer. That we may, O Lord, begin to reflect by being transformed more readily that image and that giftedness you have given to us. In Jesus' name, amen. Mary's going to do a little review for us for a few minutes.
This morning I was talking to Susan Real, and she reminded me about this wonderful story scene in The Wizard of Oz. How many of you have watched that 10,000 times? No. And at the end of the story, if you could remember, the wizard is carrying on, and all of a sudden Toto comes over and grabs a hold of the curtain and pulls it back. And he's exposed. And he's saying, don't pay any attention to that man, that silly man back there pulling levers. I am the Great Oz, you know. The Enneagram is a little bit like Toto. It just pulls the curtain back. And it exposes us for who we are. Not this thing that we've created that's supposed to be us out there. This persona that we wear to the world. But this kind of vulnerable, human, somewhat good, somewhat bad person behind, trying to pull all those levers and make everybody oppressed. And as you'll recall, it's the exposed wizard that is able to have the good and powerful and helpful connection with these people. Do you remember that? Not the wizard, the exposed wizard. So the Enneagram is sort of that process of exposing. The history, for those of you who are new, is a mystery. A lot of it is a mystery. If you wonder why you've never heard of it before, the first books on Enneagram were published, I think, the very first one in 1975. A lot of books, or some books in the 80s and a lot more in the 90s. So this is new in our culture. It's always been an oral tradition for centuries, maybe millennia, we don't know. But now it's written down and everybody has access to it and people can do with it as they like. It was always considered too powerful a tool for ordinary people, which is sort of interesting. So what we've talked about in the past night is that we are all blessed with a wonderful gift of God seed, a reflected image of God, and that we also have a wound or a curse or something that undercuts us. And I'm just going to go around and talk about that. We'll start with the ones. They got short shrift a little bit last night because we went too fast, or I didn't plan my time very well. The ones are blessed with this incredible gift of, who can remember?
Perfection.
Yep, or completion. A vision, of just an instinctive ability to see the whole and the good and the complete and the just. But the world isn't like that. And so the curse that they get is the curse of anger. And often that anger takes the form of sort of a burning, righteous indignation or burning resentment. Anger is not a good thing, so it always kind of comes out in other ways, but it sits there under a one. Twos, what is the gift?
Caring.
Now, you're not supposed to look at the sheets. You're supposed to know.
There will be a test at the end of this session.
They're given the gift of caring. They really do have an instinct for knowing what is going on in the hearts and minds of other people. And they really do feel for other people in ways that none of the other types do. But the curse comes because they have what?
Pride.
They think they have no needs and that they know for sure what the other person needs and that they know for sure they can give it. So it's that pride that combined with the caring that makes up for the two. Three, gift. What?
Productivity.
You're not supposed to have to answer these. Productivity. And this absolutely God-given ability to get things done, to see what needs to get done and to do it, gets twisted and turned into a need to be seen as successful. And if they're not seen as successful, they start to make up stuff in their own mind. So they lie to themselves, they lie to the world, but it's not really a lie because they really believe it. Does that make it not a lie? So deceit. Is it EI or IE? Okay. Have you ever noticed how your spelling goes when you get a piece of chalk or something? Fours, given this wonderful gift of what?
Creating.
But somehow that gets twisted into not a sense of their uniqueness and their gifts to the world, but a envy of people around them and this need to be special and unique, and so they just are always trying to be special. And the curse, or whatever you want to call it, is envy. Always seeing the grass is greener on the other side of the hill. I mean, that expression is a four expression. They get in a romance and a relationship, and they just love this person. And then all of a sudden, the person decides they love them back. And then all of a sudden the four says, yeah, but you know, you're kind of a jerk. And then they love somebody else. So healthy forests can live in a much calmer and more emotionally non-disruptive way. But that's what happens in fours. Fives are given the gift of what?
Knowing.
But what happens to them because they're wounded is that they believe that they do not know enough and that they cannot know enough. And so the curse is avarice, that there's always something out there that they need to get to bring into themselves because they don't have enough. They just don't have enough. They just want more. And so it's avarice. And that's kind of a hard word to wrap your mind around, but A-V-A-R? Okay. Six is our given what gift?
Loyalty.
Loyalty or faithfulness, abidingness. What should we put here? Let's put faithfulness. What's sitting underneath the six, the wound comes and it makes them fearful or doubting. So fear and doubt kind of pick away at that faithfulness and make them question and wonder and never be sure and always need to be secure but always question the security and that kind of thing just goes back and forth and back and forth in a six. The God gift and the curse. Sevens, the gift is what?
Joy.
But somehow that gets wounded, it gets cut into, and instead of being joyful, well, a part of the experience of being able to feel joy is being able to feel pain. And sevens are extremely pain avoidant because it hurts so darn much. So if you can't let yourself feel pain, then you can't let yourself feel joy because it you can't go any farther up than you've gone down, right? So what happens is that sevens become fun-loving, and fun replaces joy. And they become insatiable in their need for fun. So there's a gluttony. And that gluttony might be for material possessions, it might be for experiences, always wanting to travel to this place, to that place, to another place. If I could just go there, I'm going to be happy. If I could just go there, I'm going to be happy. For some of us, it's ideas. If I could just know this, if I could just know that. I used to think if I got a book published, I would just be the happiest person in the world, and I did. And then I thought, well, if I get two books published, I'll just be the happiest person in the world, and I did. And then I thought, well, if I just get another degree, I'll be the happiest person in the world, and I did. And then I thought, about, you know, that kind of thing. Just insatiable. It's just kind of an insatiableness. Up here with eights, what's the gift?
Action,
power.
Leadership.
What?
Leadership.
Yep. And these are the people that are just given that strength, just an innate strength. But the wound comes and some voice in them tells them that they're weak and that they've got to prove their strength. And what happens is that they get a kind of insatiability for proving how tough they are. And lust. And that word has come in our culture to mean mostly sexual things, and it could be that, but it's more a lust for power, a lust for power over, that sits at the bottom of an eight. The nines are given the gift of what?
Peacemaking.
And they are just the gentle, dear spirits of the world, the people who just want everything to be nice and things to be calm and people to be content and people to be happy and not to fight. And And what happens to them?
Lazy.
Yeah. They feel anger. They're anger-based. They're up here in their anger triad, so they're anger-based. Anger is a bad feeling, isn't it? For some people. It feels disruptive. It gets you revved up. You're not content if you're angry. So nines don't like that feeling of anger. And so they just press it down. They just like take a garbage can lid and just whoosh it down. And the more angry they are, the more energy it takes to hold that lid down. And the more energy it takes to hold that lid down, the less energy they have for anything else. And so they become lazy.
Sloth. Procrastinate.
What?
Procrastinate.
They procrastinate, they diddle, they float. Just lots of words that describe nines when their energy is going to hold their anger down. They can also become passive aggressive. In this book project we've been working on, this daughter, our wonderful daughter who's a nine, and she wasn't getting things done. And then I noticed that she wasn't answering her email. And then I suspected she wasn't even reading her email. So I called her up and I said, "Hun, you know, are you getting a little passive aggressive here?" And she said, "Oh, Mom, yes." I just can't get it done, and I just, oh, yes. So that's nine. Good enough review? Anything else we need to say? Any questions right now? We're going to try to leave time for questions at the end. So we hope that will work.
What I want to do first is talk about wings. Very simple thing. Here is type number one. Type number one has the possibility of two wings, either nine or two. So you can take any number on here and look to the one side of it and to the other side of it, and those are the possible wings. And the wings will give you give us an indication sometimes of our real number. We'll discover that we have, for instance, if a one has a lot of the two kind of emphasis and feeling in their life, you might discover, hey, I really am a one, because I've got this concern with completeness, but I also have this caring. And this becomes kind of difficult to do in a short period of time, because with nine types and each having two wings, we've got to move quite quickly. What I'm going to do to give you just some glimpse of each one of them is to give you the names of two people of note, and then I'm going to describe the characteristics that these people have with their wings. Okay, and I'm going to start with one. We let one kind of get short shrift last night, so we're going to start with one. And so the first one I'm going to talk about is the one with the nine wing. Okay, the one with the nine wing is known as the idealist, and let me just give you a couple of names for the idealist, the one with the nine wing. A couple of people: Mahatma Gandhi, Sandra Day O'Connor, Katharine Hepburn, Al Gore. And I'm sorry for Republicans here, I don't know what George W.'s type is, or what his wing is, so I can't place him.
But he's not a nine.
Huh? But he's not a nine. No. Well, he's one of the nine, though, and I don't know where he is. Anyhow, the idealist looks at the big picture, okay? They are people of really very great, great vision. They're usually very erudite. They usually are very sure of what they're doing. They're very discerning kinds of people. And they want to improve things. All of them want to improve things, but they don't want to be doing that in a very confrontive way. They want to be doing it in a peaceful way, in a gentle way. And if you think about Gandhi, even though his system ended up confronting the British government, He practiced what? Nonviolence, peaceful kinds of demonstrations, was a man of great peace within. So the one with the nine wing, the idealist, takes that concern for the big picture, for the completion of everything, and puts it together with that kind of peaceful or gentle way. The one with the two wing looks really quite different. That person is the advocate, if there's a term we can give to that individual. And the advocate, Ralph Nader, Hillary Rodham Clinton, Joan Baez, those names sound familiar to most of you, I guess, in the room, yeah. And the advocate takes the idea of completion, the one, you know, and the whole idea of completion and wholeness, and then that person has a very deep empathy for those who are in need. So they pick up the qualities of the two, and they are one with a two wing. They want to improve humanity's lot. And these are the kind of folks who are willing to get down in the trenches to do it. The idealist often will stand aloof. But the twos, the ones who see the big picture, want completion, want improvement, they're the folks who are willing to get down in the trenches and really work. And when you think of how long Ralph Nader's been at it, you know, kind of is a good reflection. So that's kind of the two wings of the one personality type. You can stop me any place along the way, but I'm going to try to move through these quickly because I want to spend more time even on arrows, and I am very conscious of time. The two with a one wing might be called the servant, okay? Mother Teresa, Desmond Tutu, Eleanor Roosevelt. And these people, out of their own personal goodness, give themselves to serve others. Okay. They're a combination of morality and empathy. They see, they understand justice, and they will work for it, and they have that deep concern for people, which is at their base, or their deep caring for people. Caring informed by justice or by completion. And so they really are people who are out to relieve suffering. They look at the needs of people. They care for those people. There is justice in helping those folks, and they are willing to go to the line to care, to relieve the suffering of folks. Those are the servants. The two with the three wing has caring at his or her base, and then getting things done as the wing. You might call them the host or the hostess. They're very extroverted. Luciano Pavarotti is a two, probably a two with a three wing. Sally Jesse Raphael, a two with a three wing. Sammy Javis Jr., a two with a three wing. And they seek love through the creation of personal conviction, and they have very high self-esteem. But they relate, that high self-esteem are related to their own personal qualities rather than the quality of service to others. They're very sociable, they're very charming, they're very adaptable. Hey, you'd like to be welcomed by any of those people. Twos with a three wing, a host or a hostess. Then we look at threes with a two wing. This is the charmer. This is the charmer. This person is going to wend his or her way into your heart. Christopher Reeve. Anybody not like Christopher Reeves? You know, even before his accident.
There are seats over here.
Jane Pauley is a three with a two wing. There are some who say that Bill Clinton is a three with a two wing, though there's not quite a total agreement on that one. And these folks are really very, very spontaneous, you know? They're so outgoing that sometimes they look like sevens. They're generous, they're helpful, they're poised, and they have very high personal achievement levels. They get things done, okay? But they're much informed by this kind of love and caring that a two has. A three with a four wing might be called the professional. Michael Jordan. Oprah. Barbara Streisand. F. Scott Fitzgerald. And their self-esteem comes from where? From the work that they do. And one can look at all of their lives, and those folks have worked hard, they have given themselves totally to their careers, they have found success. They find great pleasure and reward from their careers and from their work. And they will make just about any personal sacrifice to maintain their professional integrity. Three with a four wing. Sometimes threes with a four wing resemble ones, because they can be serious, very serious, because they are really quite driven. Okay, then let's talk at four with a three wing. This person is the aristocrat. This is Jackie Onassis, Tennessee Williams, Judy Garland. What they do is they combine creativity and ambition. The creativity of the four and the ambition of the three wing. And they are people who keep their eyes very clearly on goals. These fours with a three wing are much more sociable than fours with a five wing. They like to be out there. And they work hard to commit themselves and their creative endeavors to others. They're out there for the sake of others. I do my creativity stuff for others, for the public. Fours with a five wing, on the other hand, do their creativity for themselves. Bohemians, they might be called. Greenwich Village might be where they live. Bob Dylan. Ingmar Bergman, Anne Rice. They're very highly personal in their response, but they really do create more for themselves than for the public. They get the satisfaction themselves out of what they are doing. They are they enjoy a creativity that is very authentic and very deep and very wonderful. And they are also the kind of people who defy convention. They want to do their thing. They're willing to break the rules, and they really don't care because they're creating for themselves, not for the public. Those are fours with a five wing. The fives with a four wing, if I'm putting anybody to sleep, please tell me, okay? All right. Fives with a four wing, Stephen King, Lily Tomlin, Vincent Van Gogh, Georgia O'Keeffe. These folks are very emotional and they are very introspective. They look deeply within. And they are always seeking a niche that's not already been explored by others. These are the iconoclasts. They don't want to occupy a place that somebody else is already occupying. They want to carve out for themselves that very special place that they can call their own. They're very much loners. They might do stuff out for the public, but they are very much loners in their life, and they They live to use their imaginations. They're not scientific or analytical. It's in the imagining that they find their life and meaning. Fives with a four wing. The five with a six wing is a problem solver. Very, very different than a five with a four wing. Bill Gates, Charles Darwin, Doris Lessing, Amelia Earhart. And these folks have very strong powers of reasoning. A reasoning that's based on observation, and they are very attentive to the details around them. They're much more interested in the practical things of life than the five with a four wing is. And these folks, more than any other type, make more money than any other type. And not just because Bill Gates was in a name in there. But these folks solve problems, they're very practical, and they find their place, and they know how to make money. Okay? That's a five with a six wing. Then we'll move to six. Six, faithful, with a five wing. This type might be called the defender. Robert Kennedy. Gloria Steinem, Janet Reno, Richard Nixon. I'm not sure that Bobby Kennedy would like to have his name mentioned in the same category as Richard Nixon, but maybe Richard Nixon wouldn't like his name mentioned in the same category as Robert Kennedy. I don't know. Okay. Anyhow, these people are very attentive and very appreciative of systems where rules and parameters are well established. It doesn't mean they won't break them, but they want to know where the rules are, where the boundaries are, where the parameters are. And they can excel very much in their particular enterprises. Sixes with a five wing are especially good analysts of the political situation or the economic situation. I was wondering if Alan Greenspan might not be one of those. They are very capable social commentators about what's going to happen in life, teachers. And they often serve as strong advocates for the disadvantaged and the marginalized people of societies, of society. Six with a five wing. Six with a seven wing is a buddy. Princess Diana. Gilda Radner. Jay Leno, Katie Couric. These folks are funny. They love to have fun. They love to have a good time. And they will avoid almost at any cost any heavy topics. They don't want to do them. Leno will talk about something heavy, but put it in a light thing. They don't want to get too close to anything that is heavy. They are very serious about commitments. And they are willing to sacrifice for their families and their friends. They love to joke. They enjoy good company. And they like to tell stories. That's a six with a seven wing. Seven with a six wing, the entertainer. Robin Williams. Mozart, Carol Burnett, Steven Spielberg. They're very productive people, and they are very playful people. They have a joy about life, they have a positive attitude and positive outlook, they have very quick and sharp minds, and they interact easily in groups with other people. the entertainer. Seven with a six wing. Seven with an eight wing is quite, looks quite different. Seven with an eight wing is a realist. Leonard Bernstein, John Kennedy, Bette Midler, they have strong leadership abilities. They're very, very quick on the uptake in terms of their conversations with others. They lead to either great wealth, often, or great success. They are strategic thinkers, and they are very determined to get what they want. They're not going to wait for anybody else to give it to them. They're going to get what they want. They're tough-minded, they're practical, and they have a biting sense of humor. Seven with an eight wing. An eight with a seven wing might be called the independent. Franklin Roosevelt, Donald Trump, Barbara Walters. They have quick minds, they have great vision for practical possibilities, they are possibility thinkers, they're action-oriented, they want to have an impact on the world. A lot of your entrepreneurs are eights with a seven wing, and they're entrepreneurs because that's the way they preserve their independence. Eights with a nine wing, that's the big bear. The cuddly bear in some ways. Martin Luther King Jr., Golda Meir, Indira Gandhi, Toni Morrison, Norman Mailer. These are people of real strength, people who have real self-confidence, but at the same time have kind of a laid-back quality. You know, they're not uptight, they're kind of easy. Okay. They're very steady in pursuit of their aims, they're much less aggressive than the eights with the seven wing, they're much warmer in personality, family-oriented, and they exercise power and leadership through protecting those whom they regard as theirs. That could be family, that could be church, that could be union, that could be whatever it happens to be. They're very, very protective. And they have a wonderful ability to calm other people because of their own calmness and very strong leadership. The bears. And then let's finally look at the nines. Nine with an eight wing is a referee. This person is powerful as an eight, has that power of the eight, but is really a very gentle character at the same time. The nine comes through. Very good mediators. If you ever are in a labor conflict, try to find out if the mediator is a nine with an eight wing, because that person will be fair, and that person will enable the mediation process to move ahead in a very healthy and positive and constructive way. These are very practical folks. Ronald Reagan was a nine with an eight wing. Walter Cronkite. Lady Bird Johnson. And my favorite, Whoopi Goldberg. Yeah. And they find it very, very easy to engage people and to use their power in that kind of peaceful, gentle way. And finally, the nine with a one wing. So we've now made the full circle. The nine with the one wing is the dreamer. What was the biggest film on the market in the past months? Huh? George Lucas. Star Wars. George Lucas is one of those dreamers. Carl Jung, the psychiatrist, one of those dreamers. Garrison Keillor, one of those dreamers. You can tell if you listen to all his Lake Wobegon stories. Queen Elizabeth II. Maybe you didn't put her in that category. But dreamers are those imaginative people who are able to synthesize all different kinds of thought into a vision of an ideal world. Garrison Keillor happens to be at Lake Wobegon, I guess, his ideal world. Queen Elizabeth has an ideal vision for England. It hasn't been working too well of late, I guess. But she is friendly and reassuring, which her subjects need to know. And she has a distinct sense of power and our purpose and ideals. Those are the nine types. We have 15 minutes left, okay?
Twenty minutes, yeah.
Those are wings. So did anybody, did that help anybody as you're thinking about your own personality type? Did it help you to get a better place there for yourself? Do you see some things that that maybe you, just knowing the type or having an indication of type, didn't have? I hope that that assisted you in a way. We're now going to go to talk about arrows. And you see these arrows. If you're a five, the arrow five goes to seven in stress.
My sister, who's a five, when she gets into stress mode, she gets the monkey mind of a seven. And she just...
She can't concentrate on anything. She's all over the place.
She can't concentrate on anything. And she can usually concentrate on anything. Yeah. I mean, she's an incredibly concentrated person. But when she's in stress, she gets the monkey mind of a seven.
And when she is secure, she receives those qualities from the eight power.
That's when people get their book out and go on the book tour.
Yeah. Well, if you look at whatever your number, you think your number is, the arrow that is coming towards you from another place is the arrow where you're getting your from which you're getting your security. The arrow away from your number says this is where I go in stress. And so we're just going to quickly talk about three different types. So you get the idea as you look at the green sheet that you can take with you. It's the arrow that comes towards you that shows you where you are in security. The arrow going away from your type is the one where you are in stress. We're going to have Sobe talk for a few minutes about a one. One receives the security from the seven and insecurity moving toward four.
Sobe, by the way, is our daughter, in case you people have figured that out.
Yeah,
it's a great tool for family discussion, right?
Oh, yes. just real briefly, one in stress goes to four. As I said a couple days ago, I thought as I was first exploring Enneagram that I was a four for a long time. But the reason I did is because I identified with the depression that fours can get into. But the depression that I experienced was very different from the depression of a four. It was because I couldn't live up to my own ideals. And so therefore, I sunk into a depression of the four. So in stress mode, which for a one is basically life.
What's new, huh?
Yeah. So the only thing harder than living with the one is being one. So that's always a tendency then to go to the four, to go to that depression, because you can't live up to your ideals. Okay. But in security, when I'm feeling pretty safe and secure about my surroundings and about myself, I will pick up some of the healthy qualities of a seven, which is spontaneity, playfulness, just joy, just for the fun of it. And it's very clear in my... at what moment I have my sermon done. Because as soon as I have that sermon done, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to go party or do whatever. I can be as spontaneous as any seven around. But until I have it done. So,
Mary is a seven. Let her.
The joke about ones are that they plan their spontaneity.
Seven receives in insecurity from a five, and insecurity she goes to one.
So a seven and a one have this interesting link. So I know one energy. I can feel it. I've been there. But when a seven goes into one space, kind of medium level, you go to a lower level of health because you're under stress. We do it in a much more frenetic way than ones do one. I used to joke about myself as being a member of the Cause of the Month Club. Ones get a cause and they hold it for a lifetime. Sevens, this cause, and it's so interesting, and they're saving the Indians, and then they're in this cause, and they're feeding the hungry of the world, and then they're this cause, and they're, you know, whatever. It's just that kind of much more frenetic energy. But you can get into the same perfectionism. We're right now in the final stages of this book of editing, and I can just feel it in my body. I tense. I just get rigid, like ones get rigid, just tight.
I haven't noticed that.
No, I think you know. It's so nice not to mention it. Because I'm so afraid that we're gonna miss a typo. We're gonna miss, you know, something's gonna go out. There's gonna be a big mistake in it. When I'm in security, I go toward five, which is what I wanted to be and what I thought I was for a year, and I just clung to the notion I was a five because I wanted to be a thinker, and I wanted to be an academic, and I wanted to be an intellectual. And in fact, I can get into this space, and usually when I'm in that space is when I get an idea for a book and I finish it. You know, when I know enough about something to really stick with it long enough to get the book written and to get it out. Then I've picked up this secure five space. So that's how that works for a seven.
I'm a six, and in security I go to nine, and in stress I go to three. I was in a call process for almost a full year, from May of 97 to mid-April of 98. And I lived an awful lot of that point in time in this stress mode because of all of the, this particular process. I met with the church council four times, or I met with the call committee four times, met with the church council, ended up having to preach before the congregation, lead worship before the congregation, do a one-hour question-answer session before the congregation. All of these kinds of things, you know, create a little stress. You know, you get a little anxiety, you get a little fearful. And when I go over there, what happens is I get very productive, but on things that aren't worth a whit. I clean my office, but that doesn't help anybody, you know. I do all of these things that are inane. Just like, you know, the three is very productive, but I get productive in things that don't mean anything, you know. My secretary is glad I clean my office once in a while, you know. So she comes in one day a year, she looks, she said it's clean, and she doesn't come back for 364 days, you know, because she knows it's going to be a mess, okay. But I get very productive that way, and I also get deceitful. Isn't I tell lies, I just don't tell truths, old truths. And I have a tendency to put people down when I'm not in good health. Instead of thinking, because how is it that you can feel good about yourself? Oftentimes, don't we put somebody else down? That's what happens when I go to ill health. I don't like it, but I end up there. I go to this three over here, this deceitful three, and I'm very anxious about my image. But when I'm healthy, I can actually be a laid-back guy. Because I get all my energy, or a good share of my energy, from this wonderful peacemaking nine up here. Two of our friends came up to Holden on Tuesday, and Their remark is, they've never seen me look so relaxed and so peaceful. Must be the environment, huh? I don't know, or the air or something. Or maybe all of you, whatever it is. Anyhow, so I get really very tranquil, very, very quiet, very happy with life, very content with myself. You know, things are going well. That's insecurity. And I'm not fighting my feelings. But I'm feeling good about who I am as a faithful person who does have that giftedness, and when I'm living in it. So arrows tell us where we go in stress and where we go in security. A couple nights ago I said, pay attention to the clues. Be mindful of yourself. When you're feeling secure, what do you look like? Here. When you're feeling stressed, what do you look like? The more we keep those clues in mind, the more we may indeed say, hey, I can begin to be transformed. And the Enneagram is a way, a roadmap, to help us toward transformation. Now, I'm going to, there are some other things called instinctional variants, and you're going to see other subtypes. Wings and arrows are subtypes of the main types here. There's something, when you do further reading, you're going to see instinctual variants that talk about the social subtypes, self-preserving subtypes, the relational subtypes, and we really don't have time to go into that now. How about some questions for the last 10 minutes that we're here? Yeah?
When you talked about the different types with the wings, is it possible to take qualities from both sides, or do you need one or the other?
Yeah. Don Rizzo says you have a dominant wing, but you still have two wings. At one point in his theory, he said you only have one wing. Loretta Brady, another person who's been involved in Enneagram, says you need two to fly. Okay? And Helen Palmer also talks about two wings. So
Helen Palmer's latest theory is that the wing here
this way.
Clockwise. So if you're a six, this side, the clockwise wing, is the wing that is your positive self in the world, and the wing back here tends to be your more shadow or your introspective side. So you know, some people start out one way and they have to develop the other, and some people start out one and they need to develop the other. Yeah.
See, my wing is over here, so I have a very private life. I try to have a very private life, you know. And this is my shadow kind of stuff. And I'd rather sit down with a book at times, you know, than be at a church council meeting for sure. You know. And I'd like to be in my office, don't disturb me. I'd like to put out the sign that says don't disturb me, you know. That's one way. But sometimes, you know, a lot of times I don't exhibit a lot of joy and delight. That's why I married a seventh. So she could help me understand that, you see. Okay? Because she knows all about that. And she can help to pull me there. And I have to work here. I mean, I have to work here because I'm also an introvert who loves this, you know, who loves that to put the lock on the door and the sign that says do not disturb, you know, until Christmas, you know, that kind of stuff. So your wings, you need both. Yeah.
Over here.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Here. This is really helpful. It's also very complicated.
It is. It's very complicated. That's right.
I've been involved supervising students, and one of the things I've tried to instill within them is that your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. I don't know if it's fair. I don't know how that fits in. But you know, the incredibly compulsive, organized person, that's a great strength. It also bites you in the butt in terms of being a great weakness.
Yeah. It's easier for me to talk on that. The great strength of the six is faithfulness. Mm-hmm. But I use faithfulness in a corrupt and deceptive way.
Yeah.
So it becomes my greatest weakness. So it fits very, very readily with what you're saying. Over here.
Can the wing be anything other than the number on either side of the
outside of your panel?
You know, all of us, I mean, basically, we have access to these four other places. In reality, we have access to everything. But it comes most readily to these four other places.
I was curious if, I guess by getting more with the God in part of this, if you get in touch with God enough, would you be a reflection of all these things?
Would you be what?
A reflection of all the numbers.
Well, I think that certainly is a possibility. Though you're rooted in one of these places. You're really rooted in one of these places. And then the wings and the arrows are also pieces of that. But if the more you are in touch with God, I would hope that in all of us these gifts would begin to rise and begin to be demonstrated.
And the weaknesses.
And yeah, hopefully. But remember, don't, you are not you without your weaknesses. Don't try to be something you're not. You need the giftedness and the shadow. My shadow goes with me wherever I go. Other questions, comments, thoughts? Yeah.
With the profiles that come up here, what are they based on? I mean, Charles Darwin was not alive to.
No, what they're based on is what we see of these people, right. The way they act. Right. Now, nobody has given them the interview that you had.
Right.
They may actually be something else, but as observers of them, yeah. We can get an idea of the kind of the stereotype of a type.
Yeah, but Darwin is not a rock. I mean, he's not a, we can't observe. What no, we do is we know the life stories.
Right.
We know the life stories, right. And that's where you get, that's where the, you know, and they're not saying these are perfect calls, but they're saying there are enough indications in a person's life to put them here.
And another question, how do what you might call either mental disorders or conditions that layer on personality, I mean something, something, I mean, it could be something like alcoholism, it could be obsessive compulsive disorder, it could be actual psychotic behavior.
Well, if you look at the Riso book, he would say that there are certain types that have a propensity toward particular kinds of mental disorder.
Yeah.
But
my type, my type leads toward alcoholism. I mean, that's the propensity.
And my type for schizophrenia. Mm-hmm. Sometimes toward murderous rages, sometimes toward, you know, that. But
it becomes,
there isn't
of course,
enough
more
information to know, I mean, these things can happen to anybody. This is just propensity.
Yeah, and it just becomes, you know, he said it was complex. You're right, it's complex. That makes it even more complex.
Yeah.
Try to get at that. And if one can get at it, is a real question. Any other, yeah?
Well, building on that then, since we have the triads for the heart, the gut, and the thinking, what about physical ailments? Do we tend, like, as sixes, do we tend to have more headaches because we're thinkers, or?
Somebody has done research that fives tend to have more headaches.
Yeah.
So I was discussing.
Eights have, eights are, is that in the stomach?
Yeah.
And one's in the stomach.
Yeah.
I don't know about one night. Yeah, it may be. This is, you know, oh, I'm not going to go with that.
But there are certain diseases that tend more toward certain types. Just because of the way our, all of this is energy. We're talking about energy. We're not talking about it's just energy in the world. And so that energy in a certain place, if we imbalance ourselves with energy, it's going to do something for our bodies. Yeah.
And the wings and arrows really tell us that we're always moving. We're not static. We're never static. We're always moving.
And we pray,
you know, to the one in whom we live and move and have our peace. and this one to whom we pray lives and moves and has being. Okay, we've got a minute and a half, according to my head.
I wanted to say one more thing. Riso has also, speaking of moving, he has these lists of layers of adjectives for when you're, what you are like in your most healthy self, all the way down to what you're like in your most unhealthy self. And it's big graphs at the end of his work. And it gets pretty complicated. But the whole idea is that you can move weight-wise, you can move arrow-wise, and you can move up and down in health. And on Saturday, that's kind of a nice segue, we don't meet tomorrow, but Saturday, we're going to be talking about how to use this kind of information in terms of our own spiritual growth, our spiritual journey, our spiritual transformation.
And for those of you who are not going to be here on Saturday, you know, as you go back to your own homes and your own communities, think about going to the library and looking up books on the Enneagram. Riso is a name. Palmer is another significant name. If there are Catholic orders, convents, monasteries in your communities, retreat centers, give them a call. Most of those folks are in tune to what the Enneagram is about and use it in their own practice with clients and with groups. So there are plenty of resources there to continue. Here.
Yeah, you said that. Say that 2 to 4 are more feelers, and mm-hmm. 5 to 7 more thinkers. Mm-hmm. What about the 8 to 1? Are they more intuitive, or are they more will-oriented, or?
Well, it's up at the top. That? It's gut relating.
But what is that? Is it the?
It's you say you've got a gut feeling.
It's a knowing that takes place down here.
Okay.
You know.
I just know it in my gut.
Yeah.
You know, I just have an instinct. I just know it. Yeah. That's instinctual, sometimes called. Yeah.
And next week, for those of you who are going to be around, we're going to talk about parenting and Enneagram and love relationships and Enneagram and work relationships and Enneagram. And we'll have a good time. Thank you for being present tonight. Hope this was helpful. The end.